Back here on 3D, hour number three, as we wrap things up here from Radio Row. We'll have a fourth and final hour coming up on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren McFarland and Derek Mason. Did you hear that snap, by the way? I snapped. That's pretty loud. I was like,
yeah,
you
like, get over here. I'm talking to Vince and Hines, and you're like,
get on over here.
And I see why now. I see why.
Our next guest.
Let me
so rude.
Let me say this before we introduce our guest.
Okay.
Because she is such a beautiful young lady. And I met her 2 years ago, and it was an instant friendship. Mm-hmm. She moved here from Atlanta, mm-hmm. and I gave her my lawnmower. She still has it.
I still use
it. That is quite the first impression.
Yes. One of the kindest things anybody's ever done for me, and I paid it forward by mowing my neighbor's yard, I still use it very much so, and still very grateful for it.
I've never heard the first encounter a lawnmower. That's the first in my life.
Yeah, it's the first time for everything, right?
That's outstanding. Rachel Barbeau here at the table with us. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Yeah.
What stood out to you as we sit here kind of wrapping things up in day two?
Yeah, to be honest with you, today was one of those days where I didn't grab too much from the players, from the coaches. But I will tell you, yesterday I was struck by Orgeron. I was struck by the 2.0. I think he's learned his lesson, and he said that as much. He said, I've learned to not yell at my players. I've learned to keep my shirt on. I've learned to let my coordinators do their job.
Yeah, not trying to fight your team is a good thing.
Yeah, not trying to fight your team. And I think, and he knows it. Very rarely will Muschamp and Ed Orgeron get a second chance at a conference to be a head coach. And so I think both of those guys have learned their lesson. Something that struck me yesterday really big was I was talking with Darius Geis. And somebody asked him why he runs the way he runs. And the person said, the interviewer said, announcers say you run angry. Is that true? And he said, yes. So he goes on and he asked another couple of questions. And I did a follow-up and I said, so if it's true that you run angry, what are you running from? Like, did somebody disrespect you? Did somebody, what was it? And he got really quiet for a minute and, like, locked eyes with me. And there was, like, nobody else in the room, it felt like. And he said, I'm running from where I came from. I'm running because I shouldn't be alive. I'm running because my 5-year-old brother is still there. I'm running to get my family out. And I'm like, tears are welling up in my eyes. And he's just staring at me. And it just made you realize. And it's very important for me, for people to know that these are young men that have come from all sorts of different backgrounds, and they're so much more than athletes.
It humanizes.
Yes, thank you. And I speak to young men across college campuses all over the country, and one of the things I tell people is these young men are dying for you to know everything that they are that has nothing to do with their athletic ability. There are so much more than just their 440, than just their bench press, than just their stats. Game or stat line after a game, and that's important to me. And in that moment, it really humanized him. And every time I watch him run, there's that whole other layer in that story.
Well, he didn't dress yesterday like he was running angry. In the hot pink suit,
he looks so great. He's so much personality.
Right, he's constantly smiling. Doesn't come off as an angry individual.
No, I think he said when he's running.
I know what you say. He's obviously talking about
his background,
mm-hmm. Where he came from. Mm-hmm. And, look, that just tells you, and I know this is unfortunately going back to the football player because you were trying to humanize him, which is great. But when you come out of the shadows of Leonard Fournette, it's not easy to keep attention on you.
Yeah.
And he's done that.
Yeah.
I mean, that just tells you how special he is as a player.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard somebody say that they kind of felt like, and you can speak to this, D, mm-hmm. that – he almost hits those holes.
Well, I'm a D, too, so you'll have to specify which D you're talking to.
Both of us.
That he hits those holes a little bit faster maybe than Fournette does. There's a little bit more speed, like, coming in and out of those holes. And so,
like, I thought Fournette was the angry, like, literally angry when he ran.
Did you know that Leonard Fournette used to be an offensive lineman? Crazy story.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he, in Little League, in the, like, Pee Wee Leagues, he was an offensive lineman because he was so good at running back, and he was so big, and they told him he couldn't play that position anymore. And so the parents complained, and so he became an offensive lineman because he had to. And so that's why, like, within games, people would stop talking trash to him because you don't talk trash to Leonard Fournette because you're going to get a stiff arm. So they would talk trash to his offensive line. And then that he said that would piss him off even more because he used to be a lineman. And so, yeah, Leonard Fournette used to be a lineman.
Oh, that's good. Looking at the obviously, when you look at the landscape of the SEC, and I've asked this question to just about everybody because we get, you know, different answers in regards to the East. We get a Florida, we get a Georgia, we don't get Tennessee's anymore. Watch out for Kentucky. They could be one of those up and coming teams. Vandy's going to be pretty good. Why do you believe it's gotten to a point where the East has so much uncertainty?
You know, that's if we could figure this out, then I can tell you that all the coaches of the East would be on the same recruiting level. They'd be on the same plane with the West. To me, that's kind of like the million-dollar question, the chicken and the egg. Like, I can't figure out for the life of me, and I've been covering this conference for 10-plus years, why the disparity with the East. Why? They're going after the same players. They are coming from the same coaching tree. I mean, Kirby Smart was Nick Saban's defensive coordinator through multiple national championships. It's not coaching. You know, McElwain is too. It's not coaching. They're going after the same players, but for whatever reason.
It's not facilities.
It's not facilities, but for whatever reason, this power is on the West. I heard somebody joke the other day, Chris Childers, he's on Sirius as
show
well.
Show Pony.
Yeah, Show Pony. Yeah. He's hilarious. Gosh, he's so funny. But
We had Neuheisel yesterday, I always barb him, bring up Childers, because I know he's going to just start Show Pony and everything.
The back and forth between those two is so funny, too, you know. But he said he feels like, it was a joke, a half joke, but he feels like everybody should just wait for Nick Saban to retire and then let's figure out how good everybody else is. Like, until then, 9-10 wins should be, like, okay. Like, you should just deal with that, and your AD should just deal with that. And it's true. I mean, he's pretty much, it's the Nick Saban effect. People get fired because of him. People get hired because of him. These offensive analysts that work underneath them make, I think, $32,000. Either $27,000 or $32,000 a year. And it's like a Betty Ford clinic for coaches that have had problems. And they go and they work in this offensive analyst position. And then because you work there, you are like higher up on the list to go get hired somewhere else. Like they feel like you're rehabilitated. And so everybody's judged by them. The East is judged by them. Coaches are judged by them. But if you can tell me why the disparity is in the East to the West, man, I'd love to answer that question for you. I think if I knew it, I'd be a really popular person.
It gets boring saying, besides Alabama. Yeah, it's like we always have to, like, take them out of the equation.
Yeah.
And then let's get to the question.
Yeah.
It's like
– But
that's credit to them because that's what they are.
And, I was just doing a radio show a moment ago, and the guy said we were talking about pinching ourselves, the fact that we cover football and what we do for a living, and the fact that – we are watching a dynasty, like a modern-day dynasty, right? And we're either covering it up close or from, 360, whatever. But we're watching it. And so you can tell your grandkids one day, like, I covered Nick Saban. Like, he's not going to be around forever. I mean, he's aging, and I think he will coach out this contract. But he's just damn good.
Hey, Derek, listen to this question. Hey, Rachel. Take Alabama out of it. Who's the next best team in the conference?
Oh, that's good. I have a strong feeling and a question mark, and I'm very curious about LSU this year. Ogeron 2.0, like I talked about, but you've got Dave Aranda, one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, and you've got Matt Canada, who took a very average Nathan Peterman and turned him around, and turned that offense around.
Yeah, Tennessee fans are like, that guy wasn't like that in Knoxville.
No, yeah, just a little bit different.
What happened?
A little bit different. So I think if Etling can stay healthy, that's the thing. You know, you don't have minor back surgery. Those things don't go together.
Yeah,
you know,
we've always talked about that. Yeah.
Like anytime anybody cuts on your back, like that's not minor. So they're very interesting to me. I think Nick Fitzgerald is the next coming, this kid. And if Dan Mullen develops two quarterbacks, he will not be at Mississippi State in the next 5 years. Let me just go ahead and tell you that. He will be high on everybody's list. Because Dak Prescott already gives him all the credit for his development. If he does this two times in a row, and Andy Staples, my co-host, he works for SI, was talking about the fact that everybody whiffed on Nick Fitzgerald. No one, like, I think it was Middle Tennessee State and, like, one other school, nobody in the SEC. Everybody whiffed on this kid. They wanted him to play tight end. They didn't want him to play quarterback. So this kid can run and throw and is big and physical. So it's very interesting to me. But I think Auburn, if they put it all together, if Jarrett Stidham is the real deal, he will save Gus Malzahn's job. And with that running game they have and that defense of Kevin Steele, which was the absolute saving grace last year, if they put that all together, man, and nobody's thinking Auburn. So when nobody thinks Auburn, that's when they actually do something. When they think it's Auburn, much like Tennessee, then they fall to your expectations flat on their face.
Yeah. Now, like a couple years ago when the media picked him to win the West.
The darling.
They finished sixth.
Yeah.
Now, you're in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
Vandy, Vols.
Uh-huh.
Who finishes with the best season?
I do think it's I do think it's Tennessee this year because, again, the expectations are somewhat off. Like the past 2 years, it's been Tennessee. And I do think that Butch Jones knows he's coaching for his job. And I do think those players feel a little bit disrespected. I think they feel talked about. They were in there talking about the fact, you know, you guys are talking about our coach being on the hot seat, but we've won 9 games. We won 3 bowl games for the first time in 20 years at Tennessee. They've got their chest out. They're a little pissed that people are talking about their coach and their program. And I even was saying to some sports writers last night, I kind of feel bad for railing on them. They did win 9 games. I know it's not, you know, 12 games, but they won 9 games. But I do think while Vandy's on the come up, for sure, he's killing it in the recruiting game. Mm-hmm. I mean, Derek Mason's killing it in the recruiting game, especially like in Hawaii, in that region as well. But I do think it's Tennessee this year because we don't have the expectations on them so much.
So you believe he was actually recruiting in Hawaii?
Well, he told us he was headed to Hawaii. Yeah.
In fact, then we had the Hawaii coach on. He's like, would you tell Derek Mason to get out of here?
Yeah.
Stay out of our state, yes, please.
Yes, yes. The Samoans. He's good with the Samoans.
Well, that's great.
Anything else, Derek?
I could sit here. And look
he gave
at
me
her.
His lawnmower. Yeah.
I could sit here and stare at her all day.
I know you had another great story. If you could top the lawnmower.
I mean, listen, when you're giving gifts, I want you to think about the lawnmower. Okay?
I'll never forget.
Like you need to. Like every man needs to. You know, yes, we want flowers and things like that. But what's practical? Like every 2 weeks. Like I thanked him. I remember I sent him pictures for like a month afterwards. You know, like my backyard. I was like, yeah, you know, pushing my lawnmower.
Good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Rachel Barbeau, appreciate her joining us here at our table. We'll come back with the fourth and final hour of 3D. That's next.